8 years ago, the Uluru Statement from the Heart called for voice, treaty and truth. Now one of those pillars is taking shape. On September 9, Victoria became the first state to introduce treaty legislation, with a bill establishing the First Peoples Assembly, renamed Gelang Wal, as a permanent authority. Susan Hu asked Dr. Harry Hobbs, Associate Professor in the Faculty of Law and Justice at the University of New South Wales, just what is the role going to be for Gelang Wal?
So the Gelang Wal is going to be established by the Statewide Treaty Act. It's a new body. It's going to be a representative and deliberative body, which is aiming to hold government accountable for its actions and its commitment to supporting First Nations people in the state. What it does is it provides for ongoing truth-telling and healing. It advises the Parliament and the government in relation to matters that affect First Peoples. So if they're going to make laws or policies that affect First Peoples, they're saying that the Gelang Wal, the First Peoples representative body, should be able to speak to Parliament, speak to government, and make those laws and policies better.
How does the treaty aim to address the injustices?
The statewide treaty bill contains a substantial background. Most legislation in Australia doesn't have a background like this. It may have a little preamble that sets out the purpose of the bill, what it's trying to do, and where it's come from. This is really different. It has a really strong background that explains the purpose of the treaty, why we're doing this in Victoria, what treaty is intended to deliver, and really the background, I suppose, of what First Peoples in Victoria hope for it to achieve. As the background to the statewide treaty says, for more than 200 years, First Peoples in the state have been excluded from the design and development of laws and policies that affect them. The central purpose of the statewide treaty is to recognise the rights and status of First Peoples in the state and include them within the policies and processes that make laws in that state and make policies in that state. It's about building an opportunity for First Peoples to be involved in those design discussions, those development discussions, to make laws and policies that affect them better.
We know that this bill is planning to embed First Peoples' history into the education curriculum. How do you think this will affect the long-term and broad support for treaty making?
One of the challenges with modern treaty making in Australia, and indeed Indigenous-state relationships more broadly, is there really is a lot of there's not a lot of awareness about what a treaty is or what a relationship should look like or could look like. That starts with the education curriculum. You see in comparative countries like New Zealand and Canada, they have very strong curriculum, education curriculum that explores the basis of relationships between First Peoples and the state, explains the history of those relationships, the good and the not so good, and talks about a way to build a shared future together. So I think one of the really important aspects of the Victorian treaty process is that it's designed to embed treaty as part of the curriculum, explaining what a treaty is, explaining what a treaty relationship is, and indeed explaining what a relationship based on trust, on mutual respect and equality could look like in contemporary Victoria. My sense is that will help inform and socialise and build greater awareness and perhaps even understanding for the need for treaty relationships in the state.
Victoria deliberately began the treaty process by creating the First Peoples Assembly. Why was it so important to start with representation and co-design rather than jump straight into treaty negotiations?
It was really important to develop suitable architecture and institutions through which negotiations could take place, primarily because the treaty process, even though it is very significant, it still operates within Australian law. So the earliest colonial era treaties between First Nations and powers that arrived in North America or New Zealand, those treaties really were between two or more communities meeting for the first time, trying to develop a way of working together. In Australia, in the modern treaty process, all treaties need to be subject to Australian law. That means First Peoples need to have some sort of understanding and sense of confidence that the treaty will not be just one state, one party imposing its will on the other. It needs to be equitable, it needs to be fair, and the process needs to be clear. So it was really important then to develop those institutions. That included developing a representative body through which First Peoples in the state could work out what they wanted to talk about and work out how they would talk about that. And then using that body, that First Peoples Representative Assembly, to negotiate with the state and develop a clear pathway and a clear process and clear rules of conduct around how negotiations could take place. That has taken a long time. It's taken 10 years to develop all that architecture, but we're here now seeing the benefit of it. The treaty process, I would say, has been a much more structured, staggered process, much more consistent with principles about equality and self-determination than those earliest treaties we've seen, and indeed than some modern treaties in Canada.
Do you think this treaty will put pressure on other states?
I hope so. I think the importance of this treaty shows that it can work. We can develop strong relationships between state and First Nations peoples that are built on principles of equality, mutual respect and self-determination. And indeed, the success of this treaty process, I would say, should put pressure on other states to reconsider their decisions not to push forward treaty processes. It's worth noting that every government around Australia has committed, under the National Agreement on Closing the Gap, to work with First Nations peoples to develop policies and programs that better their interests and to indeed close the gap in disadvantage. The treaty process is the first one that really works with First Nations peoples to do this effectively and do this together. I think other jurisdictions in Australia should take note.
Dr. Harry Hobbs, Associate Professor in the Faculty of Law and Justice at the University of New South Wales, speaking there with Susan Hu.